Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is J. Marie Schaefer.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. We talk about all different areas of interest: elder law, estate planning, Medicaid, guardianship, and we take your questions. This is a call-in show. You can call in with your questions at 518-476-5900. And Kim, for the beginning of the show, we were lucky enough to have a guest join us.
Yes, I'm very lucky. Today we have Beth Smith-Boven. She's the Executive Director of the Northeastern New York Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. And I consider Beth to be one of my biggest mentors for a lot of my career. I first met Beth when she was, gosh, Beth, this is going back many years, but when you were at an assisted living in Waterford, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And then it moved on to Beth was then the director for the Center for Excellence for Alzheimer's Disease, and really saw that grow exponentially over the years that you were there, and then moved to the Alzheimer's Association about how many years ago?
8. In fact, I just had my anniversary this month.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Congratulations.
And thank you.
Really, you've seen the association grow exponentially, too, under your leadership. So she definitely leads. You lead a fearless team there that does so much amazing work in the community. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Kim, so much for saying that. It's been a pleasure to work with you over so many years. And all of us at the Alzheimer's are so grateful to the Herzog Law Firm for your generous support and sponsorship for so many of our events, as well as sharing so much valuable information with the people that we collectively serve, right? Because we want everybody to be doing their planning, but particularly when they face a challenge like Alzheimer's disease or dementia, it's even more important that they do that planning and they do it promptly. And I'm sure that's a message that you guys are driving home a lot on this show, and it's really an important one. It's one that we drive home with people as well. But I really appreciate the opportunity to join you today, and I would love the chance to just talk to your listeners about two things that we've recently seen happen. So the first is, of course, a change to our largest event in the nation, and that is our Walk to End Alzheimer's. Nationwide, we have over 600 of these events, and they're always very exciting events, ranging in attendance from 200 to 25,000 people in some of our biggest cities around the nation. But of course, COVID-19 has really changed the way that Walk will look this year. And so we at the Alzheimer's Association are doing kind of a mix of a virtual day with an actual walk, but because we can't all gather in large groups, we are encouraging people to walk with their teams or with their families in their own communities. So as we like to say, we're going to be walking from small towns to downtowns all over the United States. And so we will continue to hold our walks on the day that they were originally scheduled for. And our first walk comes up on Saturday, September 26th. And then our last walks, we have two of them scheduled for October 17th, and then there's two in between. And so what will happen on the day of walk, again, instead of gathering as one big group, we will have a virtual ceremony that people can watch. One of the things that I think our walkers enjoy most, and I think, Kim, you can certainly speak to this, is that Promise Garden ceremony that we have. And we use those colorful flowers to illustrate the reasons that we walk. We walk to honor people with the disease and their caregivers. And we walk to memorialize those people that have lost their battle to Alzheimer's disease. And then, of course, we walk to thank those people that have joined us as advocates in the fight. So those flowers represent everybody that's there walking on walk day. So the ceremony will be virtual. People will watch it. And then we will encourage them to take a walk in their neighborhoods. They can walk as long as they'd like to. I have a team walking on Oakwood Drive where I live, and we're going to do just about 2 miles. We've mapped out a great little route in our neighborhood. We'll be wearing our purple and carrying our Alzheimer's flags. And then we'll have an opportunity for people to drive by the planted flowers. So those colorful flowers, windmill flowers that I spoke about, will be planted by volunteers throughout the community, and we'll give folks the opportunity to drive by and see their flowers. We'll personalize some of the flowers if families ask us to, with a written message, and people can drive through and look for their particular flower. And then in the evening, people will get a thank you message featuring some folks from our home office or maybe even some of our celebrity champions, thanking them for participating in Walk Day. So it really will be a combination of virtual and in-person walking. But again, we're going to very much miss the large group component.
We're going to miss that also. We've been at many of the walks in the past, and it's really inspiring. The one in Albany at Siena College is really, you know, to see the whole group of people there. And that's a lot of really- It's a very good feeling to see that.
I know.
I'm sorry. I was just going to ask you, how can people donate, or how can they donate to the walk or sign up for the walk?
No, thank you for asking. I left out the most important thing. I'm here to give a little pitch for our events. And so it very, very easily, it's alz.org/walk. And so, and that, of course, alz.org is our website, too, so that if people are need other information or have questions about the disease or managing various things, they can go to our website and look for tip sheets or fact sheets or upcoming seminars or webinars as well. So that's a great resource. And then, of course, just add the /walk to either register and create your own family team, which would be wonderful. We'd love to have new teams join us this year. We'd love to have returning teams. Or you can make a donation to an existing team, or you can simply make a donation to the event.
Mm-hmm. And then the other great thing, too, that's kind of what I enjoy using. So there's also an app that people can use on their smartphones. And the app is really expanded this year. I mean, we just had our committee walk for the Adirondack walk, and we were all exploring the app together. And it's one thing that I think will help connect everyone as we're actually participating. It has a step counter in it so that you can actually count your steps on walk day. You can upload pictures live while you're participating. So I do really think that it will really help to connect people in the virtual event that I think a lot of times people have a hard time getting their head around participating in a virtual event. But I'm actually really excited about it because I think the association has been very thoughtful in helping people be able to maintain that connection, because it is such an important part of the walk.
Yeah, I agree, Kim, and I appreciate you saying that. We actually, I love the idea of having the app having a step counter, and we've been talking our team, and I've asked my team to talk to the walk committee, so I'm glad you guys are talking about this. But I think it would be great to have some kind of a special prize or various incentives for the walker that takes the most steps on walk day. And there's just so many, I think, creative ways that we can look at having people use that app. Of course, we'll be posting photos all day on walk day to social media when people do take those photos and send them to us. So it really will be, it'll be fun and more engaging than than it would be without the app. So to your point, I think the folks at the home office did the best they could to put together an event in light of all the changes COVID-19 has thrust upon us. And then, you know, right. families will be safe walking in this fashion. So, yeah.
That's most important.
Well, right, and that's been the thing that we talk about most often is that, you know, we serve, you know, and you guys in particular serve such a vulnerable population. And, you know, we don't have just the person with the disease, but we also have the caregiver. And what happens if the caregivers get sick and can no longer care for their loved one? And, you know, just ways that we can continue. And I think that's the other important message here is the walks are so critically important in that fundraising because a large percentage of the funds that are raised stay right here in the community. They stay right here for all the programs and services that the association provides. And for people to really understand, it's not, you know, yes, you're led by a national office, but really the boots on the ground, community support that the association provides to the folks that are dealing with this disease are so amazing, but critical and important. And we can't do it if we don't have the funds to continue to provide those services.
Right. And Kim, I'm so glad that you mentioned that because I was just going to segue in, and you segued beautifully for me, the idea that we do need people to help us more than ever this year. We've had to cancel events, as you know, and you can imagine with this with the pandemic. So we're really hoping that WALK can be as successful as ever. We've been so busy with our constituents since this since COVID kind of took hold. So many of our folks are really struggling during this time. Their adult day programs may be closed and or they may be having very limited visits with their family members. And so before the pandemic, we were averaging 183 care consultations a month. And since COVID, we've averaged 309 a month.
Oh, my
so
gosh.
We are,
wow.
The volume of people that need our care and support, especially during this time, has just grown exponentially, and we want to be there for them. But in order to do that, of course, we have to be able to keep the doors open, so to speak. So I do appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, no. So I do encourage anybody who, you know, and same thing when we have our clients come in and we talk to them about all the different services that are available, we, you know, encourage them to join us because we have a team. Herzog has a team that you can join. You know, you can start your own team. But at any point, if anybody has questions, they can always reach out to you guys, right, at the association.
Absolutely.
So how do they do that?
So they can reach out to us by phone, of course, and we have a 1-800 number that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that number is 800-272-3900. And then, of course, our website, again, is alz.org, and if you want information about WALK, you just hit / and add the word WALK to that, and you'll get all the latest up-to-date information. And while you're checking the website, I would encourage your listeners, Kim, to take a look at some news that came out of the Alzheimer's Association's International Conference, which was just held in July. And for the first time ever, that meeting was virtual. And it attracted over 31,000 people as a virtual event, representing 60 different nations. And it was quite an exciting meeting. It stretched over 4 days on just a spectacular virtual platform with different exhibitors and poster sessions. We should be very proud here in the Capital Region that we had several people present posters. And we had our friend Dave Hoffman, currently of Maria College and formerly of the Department of Health, did one of the major sessions on emergency planning for events like COVID or natural disasters. And he did a spectacular job as always. So it was a terrific event and we learned some really interesting things, including that we are probably very close to having an a blood test for Alzheimer's disease using one of the proteins that's implicated in Alzheimer's. It's called the p-tau test, and tau, of course, being that protein. So that's very exciting news for all of us. In addition, and more needs to be gathered on this as well, but there were a couple of sessions indicating that those people who received the flu and pneumonia vaccines may have some neuroprotection as a result of being vaccinated. So much more to come on that, particularly as we study vaccines for so many different things. But the evidence was staggering about the amount of people that have the flu vaccine, how much lower risk they are for developing Alzheimer's disease and dementia than the counterparts that never have the flu or pneumonia vaccine. So much more to come on that as well. And then, of course, we've got two medications that have great promise for treating Alzheimer's disease and doing so in a robust fashion that are in phase 3 clinical trial right now. And happily, despite the pandemic, those trials have been uninterrupted and are moving forward. So we really hope to have good news in the fall on phase 3. And then if it's really good news, then we'll have maybe some more information on when some of those medications will be released. So stay tuned, because better diagnostic methods, other ways that we can change lifestyle to help protect our brains, and new medications are good news for all of us. And I know both of you work so commonly with folks that struggle with Alzheimer's and dementia. I'm sure that's very welcome news to both of you.
It is. That's really great news to see that. And we do, a lot of our clients have family members with Alzheimer's, and it would be such a great relief to them to see some of these developments coming out. So very interested in that research. We're really interested in learning more about that.
Yeah, it is a very big piece of, you know, and so often, you know, we're referring people to the association for assistance, and, you know, just having that person that can walk the journey with them and give them the education and really help them understand how to get the support you need from as a caregiver, but also, you know, the type of care that is provided for the actual person with the diagnosis. So often, you know, we work with folks and they've not seen a neurologist, or they haven't gotten a correct diagnosis. And a lot of times they don't understand why having an actual diagnosis is so important, because what they hear is, well, there's no treatment, so why should I get a diagnosis? Can you speak a little bit to that, Beth, why a diagnosis is so important?
Well, sure. And, you know, while we don't have any robust treatments right now, there are a couple of medications that have been approved for Alzheimer's disease, and they're good medications. If they're given early, they work for a while. But the flip side of that is that they are not good medications if the diagnosis is not Alzheimer's disease. And there are many types of dementia that look like Alzheimer's but are not Alzheimer's. And so if you give the medication that's designed for Alzheimer's disease, it can overstimulate parts of the brain that you don't want overstimulated. So ensuring that you're giving people the medications that currently exist only for the diagnosis at hand is one reason. The second reason is that every once in a while we stumble upon a case of dementia that is reversible. In other words, somebody might have something like normal pressure hydrocephalus or a brain tumor or a variant of brain cancer that, if treated, will reverse the dementia. Now, it doesn't happen all that often, but if it happens to you or one of your loved ones, you sure would want to know that there's an opportunity to reverse this condition. And then additionally, I think it's critically important that people have the opportunity to engage in a clinical trial that looks at new treatments if they'd like to. We never force anyone or, you know, strong arm anyone to get involved in research, but it is through scientific research that we have treatments for so many diseases nowadays. And so we do need people to participate, and many times people benefit greatly from participating. And then lastly, I must say it's so important for people to know their diagnosis so they can plan. We encourage people to get that diagnosis and then meet with people like you to make sure that they have covered all of their bases. Because all too often, as you can imagine, we hear from families that they waited and they waited and they waited. And now we have an attorney who specializes in elder affairs that can help guide them. But the person with dementia is really struggling to make those decisions. And the options are not great when that occurs. And maybe you can speak a little bit more to that component. When families don't do their planning early, what their possible outcomes are.
Well, oh, sure.
I was going to say, as of late, Jane Marie and I were just talking about this, our uptick in guardianships recently has been pretty incredible. And, you know, so I'll let Jane Marie kind of finish off of there.
Sure. So, you know, if families don't have the right advance directives in place, and advance directives are powers of attorney and healthcare proxies. So if they don't have them, then they wait too long. They may not have the capacity to sign a document. So in that case, that's where our guardianships come up, because the only solution then is to go to court to have a guardianship appointed. And, you know, if it's non-contested and it's family members, you know, that's fine, but it still is a whole long court process, and it's expensive, and you have you know, court-appointed attorneys involved, and now you have reporting requirements. So that is something that we like to avoid at all costs, and try and get people to sign their advance directives while they still can do so. So the earlier you can sign those things, the better.
Right. And that's one of the things we say all the time about getting that early and accurate diagnosis, because the other part of that, of course, designating people to handle your business matters and so forth, that's one part of this equation. But the other part, mm-hmm. I feel, is that it's really important for people to be able to state their health wishes as they're diagnosed with an illness such as Alzheimer's disease. I know that I sure would want to have the opportunity to be quite specific in my healthcare proxy, and I know that you really help walk people through that, just how to craft their language to make sure that their wishes are honored. And I think the longer you wait to get the diagnosis and or meet with someone to do that planning, the less likely you are to have your wishes honored.
Absolutely. So I just wanted to quickly remind everybody that you can call in with your questions. We have Beth here for just a few more minutes. So our number is 518-476-5900. If you have a question that you'd specifically like to ask Beth regarding Alzheimer's, dementia, the association, what we provide. So, and I think, Jane Marie, you were talking. I'm sorry. That's the problem
with doing
this.
It's hard when we can't see each other. I know. It'd be nice to be able to do this live again sometime.
Yes.
So I was going to say that we have been doing in the past, we were doing live seminars with the Alzheimer's Association, and we partnered to do some webinars, and we're trying out a new format. We have a live Q&A webinar coming up. Kim, you want to talk about that a little bit?
We do. There are lots of times,
but if you could talk about the format, okay. So.
Right. There are lots of times that people have very specific questions, and I think sometimes, while the program, the actual program, formal program we have is great and gives lots of information, sometimes it leaves leftover questions. And so we thought we would, actually the Hudson Valley chapter did this, and we thought it would be a great way to kind of answer more specific questions that people have, or have people come together and bring their questions and have like an open discussion. So we are going to try it. Just to see, you know, to be able to have folks come to this forum and sign in and be able to, I think the way we're going to do it is they'll be able to, we'll have a moderator, and the moderator will be able to read the questions and then, ask them of, and we'll have two attorneys and myself on board. So, as well as somebody from the association. So, we're hoping to have a really well-rounded discussion about some very specific questions around care and advanced directives and you know, Alzheimer's and treatment and really anything that, that might come up.
Good morning, ladies. We do have a call. We do have a caller on the line. We have we have Teresa from North Greenbush.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question. My husband has early onset Alzheimer's disease, and we have an irrevocable trust, which we've had for 3 years. And if he has to go into a nursing home before the 5-year look back period, is the house counted for Medicaid purposes or is it exempt? And I will continue to live in the house. We will privately pay until money is spent down and then apply for Medicaid.
Sure, I can talk to you about that briefly. You probably would want to call us for a more detailed overview, but briefly, yes, the house is exempt if you still live in it. And if the house was put into the trust, that's a transfer that they look at within the past 5 years. But we could take the house out of the trust and put it in your name and have it as an exempt asset when he needs to apply. So that is a good way we could handle the house. And then in terms of the financial assets, we would look at that with you and see if there's any exempt items we can spend the money on. And you don't have to spend all of the money down because as a spouse, you have a spousal resource allowance that you're allowed to keep. Mm-hmm. And that's around $74,000. So there's hope there. There's things we can help do to help you. And you don't really have to worry about spending down all of your money. Okay.
Yeah, we never put the money in the irrevocable trust. It's really me. We've been doing things around the house, you know, improving the bathrooms. We've got bars in the... We got a walk-in shower for the bathroom, remove the tub, just for purposes, because he's progressively getting worse. And we did come into your office 3 years ago, and he could sign at that time, but now he can't. You know, he's getting worse. Right.
Well, I am glad that he did come in while he could sign, so that was good that you got things started and in place. So yes. I would suggest you call our office, and we can go over that in more detail with you. 518-465-7581. Okay?
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Teresa, good luck to you. And call us if you ever need us as well at the association.
Yes, it's a great website for support.
Well, thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
And we are close enough to the bottom of the hour. We're going to take our break right here. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Show coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston.
Our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
So, welcome back.
Hi there.
I'm just saying this is J. Marie Schaefer, and for people who are just joining us, Kim Hamm and Beth Boivin from the Alzheimer's Association. And we have been talking for the past half hour about different things that the Alzheimer's Association can do to help families. We've been talking about the walk events, which are usually live, but they are going virtual this year. And it sounds like the Alzheimer's Association has put together a really great alternative to that. And so if you are just joining, Beth, if you can just give out the information for the Alzheimer's Association, how they can call in or go on the website.
Absolutely. Please check out our website at alz.org and add /walk for more information about our upcoming walks to end Alzheimer's. There will be 5 of them this fall, just like always. But as Jane Marie said, this year they will be different. We won't be gathering in large groups, but rather encouraging families and teams to walk in their own communities. And then we have an 800 number that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to help families, professional caregivers, anyone that needs information. And that, of course, is 800-272-3900.
And before we go any further, I just want to give people our call-in number because we just had a good question, caller. And our call-in number is 518-476-5900. If you have any questions for us or for Beth, please feel free to call in. Okay, so Beth, we were talking about a question that you frequently get from families.
Yes, so Teresa called just before the break and asked some great questions. And one of the things that brought to mind for me is something that families ask us a lot, and that is, once they've done that planning with you, as Teresa said she did 3 years ago, how often should families check back in and either review that plan with you or look for updates and things like that? I suspect that maybe there are life events, too, that, you know, people should take pause and maybe come back in. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, sure, absolutely. So we always recommend to clients that anytime there's a life change, you know, if someone gets married or divorced or moves out of the area, that's certainly a good time to review your documents. And even if nothing like that happens, we do recommend every couple of years because things do change, right? And you kind of forget to look at your estate planning documents. So we ask you, if you have them with us, to come in for a free review, and we just look it over and make sure that the agents you've picked are correct, you know, on your healthcare proxy and your power of attorney and your trustee. And if we need to make any adjustments or changes, we can do that. We also take a look at your trust and your trust funding, because when people set up these trusts when you're younger, I think as Teresa said, they only put their house in the trust and they didn't put their money in the trust. And that's fine initially, but as you get, you know, older, or if you've got a diagnosis, for example, of Alzheimer's, then you may want to look at putting your money into the trust, or at least some of your money into the trust, to protect it. And you need to do that in advance. So you need to do that 5 years in advance of care. So that's really why we ask you to come in and have a review. And the 5-year rule is just for nursing homes. We've been talking about the looming change that's coming up, is that there will be a 2.5-year look back for community Medicaid, which is brand new and which we've never had before. So this is forcing clients to really do their planning in advance.
One of the other things that we try to remind people of is, to your point, a lot of times people, particularly in spousal situations, they will name each other as their agents, and then one or the other is diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, but they don't think about the need to maybe revise that and change their designated representative. And we get calls sometimes for families, and because they never changed their designated representative, somebody with advanced Alzheimer's disease is put in the position of being a decision maker when, of course, they cannot. So we hear that concern raised from people, too, which I think is another reason to just get in the habit of having your documents reviewed pretty routinely, because, again, in the face of a new diagnosis, if you've already done your planning, you may not be thinking about that.
That's absolutely true.
That's so true. I actually met with some folks this past week, and that exact thing is what came up. Now, luckily, the wife is still very early in her diagnosis, and So actually, Jane Marie and I are going to go back and do a home visit with them this coming week, because one of the things that they need to do is to change the advance directives. So that's, and you're so right, because as soon as I mentioned that to them, they were like, we hadn't really thought about that. And the need to do that, you know? So,
yeah.
Super important.
And what a position it puts a family in, you know, particularly if they're happy they did all their planning, you know, back in the day, and then never really gave it a second thought, and then all of a sudden end up in a situation like this, and, you know, you have a person with this disease who is put in just a terrible position, and the rest of the family as well.
Right.
Yeah, that's important, very important to look at that and get that changed. We had another situation, Kim and I did, with clients who had the spouse named, but they had no backup agents. So that was one of those situations where we had to go to court to do a guardianship proceeding.
Oh, gosh.
So it's also important to put backup agents when you do these documents. I just wanted to mention before we go on that some different events or webinars we have coming up. So we are doing a webinar with the Alzheimer's Association. It's going to be a live Q&A webinar, and that is going to be on September 1st at 4 o'clock. And this is a new format. We're going to be taking questions during the webinar about anything that, you know, comes to mind for you that you need. We have some sample questions for you, but you can raise any other questions about trust or Medicaid or Alzheimer's, things like that. And in addition to that, we have two webinars coming up this Wednesday, August 26th at 10 o'clock. We have your coronavirus checklist. Do I have everything I need in the event of a health crisis? This is a really good webinar for just, you know, a checklist to make sure you have all of your planning done, you know, whether it's coronavirus or just in general, you should kind of go through this checklist to make sure that you're prepared. And then at 2 o'clock, we have Medicaid and estate planning myths. And this is another good webinar because there is a lot of misinformation out there, and you need to be careful about where you're getting your information from. And this webinar goes through some of those myths and gives you the answers to that. And you can sign up for these webinars on our website at www.herzoglaw.com. So
well, that
we
sounds
were talking.
Great.
thank you. So you talked about clients asking about how often they should review their documents. Are there any other questions that you can think of that comes up when you speak to clients?
I think the one we hear the most commonly is, this concern that so many people have that they are going to have to lose everything if their loved one needs placement. And that people just don't understand the many vehicles that are available to them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. People do think they have to lose everything or spend their money down, and they don't realize that there are things that they can do in advance. Or if it's not in advance, right, if they've waited too long, there are still a lot of things you can do last minute, between giving assets to your spouse, putting things in a trust, we could do a rule of halves transfer where we save about half of your assets and use the other half for your care. So there are a lot of options that you can do, and we encourage you to speak to an elder law attorney before you feel that you have to spend all your money down.
Another question that we get asked very commonly is what is the difference between a revocable and an irrevocable trust?
Sure. So that is a good question. Revocable trusts don't protect your assets. So revocable trusts
mean that you are in control of the trust and you can change the trust at any time. So because you have that control over the trust, it's not going to be protected for Medicaid purposes. The only type of trust that is protected is an irrevocable trust. For that, you do have to give up some control. You have to name a family member as a trustee. But there are many ways where you do keep control over the assets in the trust. For example, many or most of our clients put their home in a trust. And when you put your home in an irrevocable trust, you still keep the right to live there for the rest of your life. You still can decide if you want to sell it or not. So by just changing the title on your deed to place them into the trust, you are protecting your home, but you're not really giving up a lot of control because of the language that's in the trust that lets you live there. So that is an example of something that many, many of our clients do.
That's right, a really critical sounding difference.
Yeah,
between the two trusts.
It is, and a lot of times, you know, to Jay Marie's point, a lot of times people get scared when they hear that word irrevocable. And we are lucky that we live in New York because it's not as bad as it sounds. Because you are able to maintain control through your trustees and beneficiaries, and at any given point, you can also change those. You can change them. So you still maintain that control. So that's really an important thing for people to remember, and it really is an important vehicle for being able to, you know, again, this couple that Jay Marie and I are seeing on Tuesday, in addition to the advanced directives, the house that they live in, it's been in their family for five generations. And, you know, so to be able to do the proper planning for them, and it is their wish that the house stay with the family, but they're going to need to do some planning in order for that to happen, because the husband, while he's cognitively okay, he's been bedbound for 4 years, and his wife is the caregiver, interestingly enough, but she was just diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. So that's really what prompted them to kind of call us, because now we know we have one person that absolutely needs care, and we have a second person now with a progressive diagnosis that we know, and she's struggling a bit. You know, she goes to the grocery store, she kind of forgets what she's there for and things like that. So she is definitely showing some symptoms. I mean, she can still care for him, but we do know that in the near future, that's not going to be, you know, something that can happen. And so it's so critical for people to really understand that. And then kind of back to Teresa, when she, you know, said her husband was diagnosed and at the time could sign documents and things like that, just because somebody has a diagnosis of dementia or Alzheimer's does not mean that they're incapacitated, right? They can still participate in their wishes and still participate in talking about what their wants are. And that's something that's so important that we advocate for, because it really does allow the person with a diagnosis to stay in control and in charge of what they want for their life, you know?
Absolutely.
When you get an early diagnosis, or, you know, when you first get your diagnosis, I should say, there's plenty of things you can do, and you can still usually get your documents in place, you know, so you're preparing for later on. And this kind of just ties into a different thing. I was watching last night. I mean, we're pretty bored, right? There's not much to watch on TV. So I found on Netflix, it's called the Eco Challenge. It's kind of like an Ironman contest where you bike and you swim and you hike and all kinds of things. And this was being held in Fiji. And one of the teams, the dad, had Alzheimer's. And he had done these in the past. And the son wanted to do this with their dad, you know, thinking probably this may be the last time they would be able to do that. And the dad was just physically fit. He could do all of the physical stuff. It was really amazing to watch. You know, he had some problems, obviously. He couldn't remember some things. Sometimes he had problems, you know, tying his shoes or getting his jacket on, but he could he could bike and he could hike and he could do everything. So sometimes, you know, initially when you get your Alzheimer's diagnosis, you know, there's still plenty of time and things that you can do. And it's a great show. I recommend it if you want to watch people go through the mud and really challenge themselves and teach you.
Yeah, really interesting. And yeah, for sure, we see people so often that maintain many of their abilities in that early stage of disease, particularly, and which is why that time, that shortly after diagnosis, is the best time to get out and get your planning done, all of your planning, your legal, your financial, and your emergency plans as well. We find more and more people nowadays that don't plan for that health emergency of their loved one. And of course, nothing has illustrated that better than COVID. We've had many of the calls that we've taken since March have been because the primary caregiver has been diagnosed with COVID and the person with Alzheimer's disease needs their caregiver, and it becomes very difficult for them to understand why that caregiver can't be available or accessible. So having those emergency plans in place is really important. And Kim, I was going to ask you if it's okay. You had mentioned a couple of times about seeing people, and maybe your listeners already know this, but, you know, the world has changed so much in terms of how we're all doing business. If families do need or want to see you, it sounds like you are meeting with people in person, or are you doing Zoom activities, or can you speak to that a little bit?
Right. So we are doing a very cautiously combination of everything. I mean, we've really tried primarily to keep it, you know, Zoom related if possible, but as you can imagine, so often, you know, people really do need that in-person contact. So we are slowly bringing them into our office. We have huge protocols, as you can imagine, when somebody comes in, obviously we're all masked, everything gets completely disinfected. And because of my job, because of being a social worker, care manager, a lot of times it's impossible really for me to make a good assessment over the phone. So, I have slowly started doing some home visits and always social distancing practice, always masked. I actually bring my own chair so I don't have to, you know, people don't have to worry about, you know, really try to minimize contact. But sometimes for folks, they just need to have, you know, and again, in this case where the husband is bedbound, there's really no way for him to get out of the house. So, you know, we will arrange the ability to meet their needs. So, yes, you know, case by case, and we really try to make sure everybody's as safe as possible. But we will provide that for folks.
Wow, yeah, that's really great.
This week also with someone who is pretty ill, not with Alzheimer's, but with another disease, and she couldn't come out. So I did make the home visit. I had on a mask. I had on gloves. I made sure everything was, you know, we tried to just stay apart. But, of course, when you're signing papers, you have to be a little bit close together. But with the masks and the gloves, and we tried to, you know, keep the risk as low as possible. We're happy to do that as long as, you know, it's safe and we can work out these precautions.
That's absolutely great, because I think to your point, Kim, you know, some things are quite easy to do by Zoom, and thank goodness we do have that kind of technology, and I shouldn't say Zoom, but by virtual platform of some sort. But boy, it is nice to be able to see people in person now and then. I'm looking forward to the day when we can do that as well. We're still working virtually at the Alzheimer's Association, but we really do miss those in-person meetings with our folks.
Well, and it's good that we've all been able to kind of, you know, implement the ability. I mean, just to your point, Beth, you know, that the fact that your care consultations have increased, you know, threefold from what they were pre-COVID just shows, you know, that the need is there for sure.
Absolutely.
I did want to give a shout out, though, to all of our clients who have adapted and learned to use Zoom. I mean, so many of them who thought they never would be able to use it have figured it out. And I'm really very proud of all of them.
I'm proud of me, and Beth, I know you can attest to this because I actually work for the, and technology is one of my, like, I have such a blinding inability to grasp technology, and so I'm actually proud of all of us who have been able to do it as well, because goodness gracious,
yeah. Well, what a learning curve, right? With you. Yeah, I'm right there with you guys. When somebody says something like, oh, you could share that slide on your screen, I immediately have this rush of panic go through me.
No, I can't.
Yeah. Actually, I'm sure there's someone out there that can do that, but it's not me. You have come to the wrong person. No screen sharing here. I'm lucky I can do the very basic stuff.
Right. So one last plug, if anybody has questions for Beth regarding, you know, Alzheimer's dementia, diagnosis, programming, you know, anything like that, this is a live show and you can call in. And the number, now, of course, I just had the number pulled up in front of me and it just disappeared. But
it's 518-476-5900. There you go.
There we go. Sorry. And Beth, you want to give another plug for the association, how people can reach you guys?
Oh, sure. Please, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at our 800 number, which of course is 800-272-3900, or our website, alz.org. And if you want to learn about walk, just add /walk.
Wonderful. And, you know, again, the website, the association continues to provide all of their services, education programs, things like that. And I hope people really will utilize the service. I know, Beth, that you need to get Scoot so you can get to the farmer's market and get your thing. So I want to give you the opportunity to bow out, and thank you so much for joining us today.
It was such a joy, and I would really encourage folks. I'm really excited about your upcoming virtual program with us, the Ask the Attorney. We have had great success with our Ask the Doc programs, and I think you talked earlier about how nice it is for people to be able to call in and sort of guide the discussion. And that's what we're looking for from this program as well. So really, I encourage your listeners to hop on and join you and have their whole list of questions, because they have great resources in both of you to answer those questions. So thanks for all you do for all the people that we collectively serve.
Of course, it takes a village.
Yes, indeed. Well, have a wonderful day, ladies, and thank you so much for having me on the show today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Beth.
Thank you. Thanks Bye-bye. For joining us.
Bye-bye. Absolutely. So long.
So that was really nice to have Beth join us and give us some information, and really wonderful. And that Alzheimer's webinar that we're doing with them, if you're interested in that, is coming up on September 1st at 4 o'clock. And it's going to be a live format where you can ask any questions you have, you know, about legally planning for Alzheimer's or Medicaid planning or any of those, anything you want, any related topic.
Yeah, we're actually doing two of them. We're doing one on the 1st, and we're doing another one on the 2nd. And not the 2nd, but the 15th. And the 15th, I'm trying to figure out the time. I think we might be doing that one at 10 in the morning. I think we were trying to do one in the morning. Yep.
That one's at 10 o'clock.
Yep. So two opportunities to be able to participate in a sort of live, and we're actually doing one during our webinar week as well with just the regular firm in relation to, you know, elder law, estate planning, Medicaid, guardianship, all that kind of stuff, right, on the 2020, when are we doing that one for?
The 25th.
There you go.
September 25th at 2 o'clock. And if you want to register for any of these webinars, you can go to our website. We are having webinar Wednesdays every Wednesday, where we are. We have two webinars, one at 10 and one at 2. And then the third week of the month, we're doing a whole week of webinars at 2 o'clock on all different topics. And we've had many clients attend more than one. You know, there are different topics. You can get information from different webinars, and, you know, we're happy to have you. And I was saying that most people are good with Zoom, but don't feel intimidated if you can't get the Zoom set up with the video. You can just call in and listen to the webinars. There's a dial-in number, and I have had clients do that as well.
Absolutely. Lots of stuff coming up. Lots of, you know, we're starting to roll into fall, which is hard to believe. But it's here already.
It is. It's been a long, long time, right, that we've been not been able to be in the office. Or, well, we've come back to the office, but that we weren't able to see people, and we are happy to be able to see people again in the office if you do want that in-person experience.
Right. The other thing that I wanted to remind people on the call with Teresa earlier kind of brought this up was that, you know, so many people focus on the nursing home piece of their planning. And, you know, we really want to remind people that there's the community care piece as well that's so critical and really can help folks either avoid nursing home altogether or really kind of bridges that gap in the event somebody should need nursing home care, you know, and that's the community Medicaid. And we are doing a lot of education programs around that because things change drastically as of October 1st. So really super important right now to get planning done, particularly if you're dealing with somebody that you know that has a progressive illness. You know, not every, it's not all Alzheimer's and dementia. You know, just like you said last week, you met with somebody, and we work with people who have ALS and all different kinds of things, but super important to get that taken care of.
That's right. Community Medicaid is important. And as you know, we talk about this on the show. You can sign up for webinars to learn more about that. And thank you for spending your morning with us. Have a good rest of the day.
All right. Thanks. Have a great weekend. Bye, Ben.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.